welcome to the political cesspool, known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Welcome, everybody, to the Political Cesspool Radio Program. I'm your host, James Edwards. It's Saturday evening, January 19th, and we have a very special and interesting show for you tonight. I'm calling in from the road, attending a private gathering with supporters here in the Jackson, Mississippi area, and I'll only be with you for the first hour. In fact, I'm calling in from a car in a parking lot right now, if you can believe it. I had to leave the function that I'm attending. So I could be with you a little bit. I just missed you too much to take off the entire night. But you're in for a treat. Second hour, Sam Bushman, owner of the Liberty News Radio Network and host of the Liberty Roundtable Show. He's been making frequent appearances on our program in recent weeks, and we're all the better for it. He's going to be sliding in and hosting the second hour along with Keith Alexander, who is in the Memphis studio tonight. About 3.5 hours up I-55 from where I sit this evening. Keith Alexander sits in my very comfortable chair. Keith, how's it going up in Memphis?
Well, I feel like Goldilocks in Papa Bear, Mama Bear, and Baby Bear's bed. Well, now, I feel great. How are you doing down there in Jackson?
Well, I'm good. You know, thankfully, it's a well-lit parking lot, so I can see my notes as I shepherd this thing in. From the road, but I'm having a good time. It's great to meet folks who love the show as much as we do. And to that end, I got a letter in the mail this week, and this is what it says. You know, we like to read fan mail from time to time. It says, James, it'd be really cool if you could create a record label and publish music. And that would be outside the box for us. The music could be any style, performed by anyone from anywhere. I saw Million Dollar Quartet with my girlfriend and her mother, and for whatever reason, I thought about you Southern guys. I'd be interested in something family-friendly, moving, thought-provoking, positive, and uplifting, basically a musical version of your show. I love your show and the energy and the positive attitude everyone in the political cesspool has. Thank you for your work. Take care and have a happy new year. And so, Keith, you know, in reading that, I want to give this fine man, this gentleman who sent in the letter, what he wants. We give our fans what they want. He wants music. Keith, I'd like for you to sing the Ballad of Davy Crockett, if you would.
You got to be kidding me.
No, you've done it before on the show. We give our fans what they want.
I'll try anything once.
Give
okay?
the fans what they want.
Born on a mountaintop in Tennessee, greenest state in the land of the free, raised in the woods so he knew every tree, killed him a bar when he was only three. Davy Crockett, king of the wild frontier.
All right, folks, you're going to get the second verse in the second hour if you're a really good audience tonight. We're going to see. I told you it was going to be a fun show. I mean, just, you know, a good atmosphere tonight.
And if you didn't like it, you could hit the mute button.
On the second hour. And then the third hour, another treat. We're going to be revisiting for the first time, you know, in very rare occasions we'll play a tape, very rare, once in a blue moon, 2 or 3 times a year. Well, tonight we're going to revisit an interview that has not been aired since its original broadcast date back in August of 2009. And when it aired, so many people were tuned in online that it temporarily caused an interruption in the ability of our network to administer the audio stream. And that was our most memorable interview with Nick Griffin, chairman of the British National Party and elected member of European Parliament, which would make him sort of like a senator here in the United States. A very, very big seat that he holds there, representing the BNP in the European Parliament, the United Kingdom. So it was one of our most popular interviews of all time. You're going to hear it again. You're going to hear TPC Radio at its very best during the third and final hour, but much more to come between now and then. And, you know, Bill Rowland set in on that particular interview with Nick Griffin, and I had the chance to listen to it earlier in this week when I selected it for rebroadcast during the third hour. And it's just amazing. It's, again, to repeat myself, it's TPC at its best. And, of course, Keith, I know we just have a minute or two before we go to the first break, and then we're going to get into some news, but I would like to ask, and I'm sure you would as well, for the entire Political Cesspool listening audience to pray for Bill Rowland and the Rowland family. Of course, it's not been a secret that Bill has been battling cancer for the last 2 years. And he is in the hospital right now, and I asked Bill his permission to share this and relay this to the audience. And he said, of course, you know, it's no secret. It's not anything I'm hiding. It is what it is. And I know you and I went up to the hospital to see him last week, Keith, and sat with him for about an hour, and you checked on him a couple of more times since then. And I'd just like the audience to pray for Bill. Things aren't going very well right now, but we do believe that he can be healed, and God willing, he will be healed. But everyone out there, please keep Bill Rowland in their mind. His contributions to this show over the course of the last 8 years have been, indescribable. I mean, his fingerprints are all over the work of this program. He has done a lot to make the show what it is, and not to mention that he's one of our best friends and just an all-around great, great man. And I know you'd probably like to say a word to that effect, Keith.
Well, Bill has a long perspective on our struggles. Struggles that we are, you know, carrying on here at the Political Cesspool. He's been involved in this movement since the 60s, since he was a teenager. You know, I'll have to admit, I don't have that long a heritage in it. I was basically trying to fit in through most of the 60s, and I don't think you were even a glint in your daddy's eye in the 60s. But Bill was a soldier there on the front lines, and Bill is very optimistic, let me add that right now, because they apparently 3 new cancer drugs have been approved by the FDA basically at the same time. I heard this on no less an authoritative source than the Michael Savage show a couple of weeks ago. And Michael Savage, who tends to have a pretty good perspective on these type of things, says that between these 3 drugs, they've basically covered the waterfront with cancer, and they think this is going to be a great improvement over the standard chemotherapy. And Bill is on one of them right now. In fact, he showed me the bottle up in his hospital room and said, this is a Cadillac. He said, this is like an $80,000 bottle of pills if you didn't have insurance. I think he's paying something like $85 with his insurance a month, but he has to take 4 a day. And he's very hopeful, and we are too, that this new wonder drug is going to work wonders on Bill.
Well, it would be you don't even want to let your mind go there, but should the worst occur, it would be a devastating loss for not only the show, but paleo-conservative cause in general. Bill is a great Christian man, and we are thinking nothing but the best and warmest thoughts for him and his family, and we are praying and expecting a turnaround of good fortune here for him now that he's on the new medicine. But I did want to relay that to the audience here at the top of the show. Meant to do it last week. Wanted to make sure it was okay to share that publicly, but it never hurts to have the power of prayer, and the more people praying, hopefully the more impactful it will all be. But that being said, again, a very big show tonight. Sam Bush and Keith Alexander in the second hour. Keith up at the studio in Memphis. I'm down here in the parking lot. Jackson, Mississippi. Nick Griffin, the replay of one of our most popular interviews ever, third hour. It's all forthcoming tonight on TPC, folks. Stay tuned. Hold on to your seats. We're going to get to the news right after these words from our sponsors.
Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign Newspaper. It is time for you to read the most daring underground publication. Spreading the word through print, it seeks to enlighten a free people to be knowledgeable with current, important events and take action in their own communities to stop the New World Order agenda of one world government. This publication is so rogue and extremely daring that establishment sources and critics rarely give approval of its content. Featured articles by concerned citizens, prominent whistleblowers, and credible authors. The Sovereign Newspaper is a monthly, 32-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about current events in the age of Obama. The Sovereign Newspaper, available now at newsstands everywhere.
Imagine a school where faith and integrity are at its center, where heritage and responsibility instill character, where educating both hearts and minds brings about academic excellence. There is a school in American Fork where character and embracing the providence of a living God are fundamental, where students' national test scores average near the 90th percentile. Based on LDS principles and a love of country, now in our 39th year, American Heritage School is accepting fall enrollment for kindergarten through high school. What would you do for your child? Give them an education that will prepare them for life. Located east of the temple in American Fork, American Heritage School is a remarkable and affordable alternative. Visit us, find us online, or in the Yellow Pages. American Heritage School in American Fork.
Are you looking for an affordable way to earn your bachelor's degree? Do you want a college experience that's more personal? Then discover your future at America's Transfer College. Students across the U.S. are choosing Ivy Bridge College as a better, smarter way to earn their degree. Thanks to Ivy Bridge's unique program, starting at a two-year college and transferring to finish your degree has never been easier. The program is simple. Start with Ivy Bridge College and take your first 2 years of college online. Transfer to one of over 140 of Ivy Bridge's partner schools and take your upper division courses. Then graduate with your bachelor's degree from the school of your choice. Personal attention, small class sizes, affordable tuition, and a clear pathway to graduation. Start your academic journey and contact us to learn more about Ivy Bridge College today. Call 877-622-2059 or visit americastransfercollege.com to find out more.
Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to a very special patchwork edition of the award-winning broadcast. Again, I'm out of town tonight, but thankfully, Keith, I will be home in time for Martin Luther King Day on Monday. Very big week for Memphian. I mean, to be in Memphis on the King holiday is somewhat like being in Bethlehem on Christmas. The only difference, of course, is that Martin Luther King is much more important than Jesus Christ now. So we get the longer end of the stick on that one, don't we, Keith?
Well, we're going to get the double whammy. I think we've got Martin Luther King, and isn't the inauguration of our fearless leader, Barack Obama, falling right on its heels next week as well?
Well, you got that, and then you got the State of the Union coming up in February. I mean, it's really a trifecta here. And, you know, I was...
Plus Black History Month coming up in February. I tell you what, if you haven't gotten your fill of multiculturalism, you'll get it soon.
Well, that's right. And, you know, and of course, you know, I was comparing King and Christ, and that's not an unreasonable comparison. You ask, you know, what is the state religion of the country? And it's got to be the Savior that one can't criticize. I mean, you know, Christ is ridiculed, mocked, berated on a daily basis. It's fashionable to do that, but you cannot offer objective criticism towards the myth of Martin Luther King. And so, yeah, political correctness, cultural Marxism is certainly the state religion, but I did put up a little joke to make light of the situation with all this stuff coming up. I mentioned the State of the Union, Groundhog Day, that's both coming up in February, and it's an ironic turn of events between Groundhog Day and the State of the Union. One involves a meaningless ritual in which we look to an insignificant creature of little intelligence for guidance, and the other involves a groundhog.
Yep, and...
Did you catch that joke, Keith? I mean, did I read it too fast? You know, my creative timing.
I was busily trying to turn on the computer here, which went off again, which you told me it would do, but... Yeah, I can't believe it. I'm actually being asked to back away from the mic. I'm usually asked to swallow it here, but the problem is that, you know, Obama told us in his first term that America was no longer a Christian country, and unfortunately, at least if you listen to the media, you've got to agree with that. The new religion, the new state religion of the United States is liberalism. Or, as we call it here, cultural Marxism, which is really a more accurate name for it. And you're going to get, you know, a heaping helping, as they used to say on the Beverly Hillbillies, of all of this in the next 30 days. I mean, if you haven't gotten your fill of liberalism by the end of February, then you've got an insatiable appetite for it. I'm already about nauseous, particularly being here in Memphis. You know, the Memphis Grizzlies, every Martin Luther King Day, which falls during basketball season, has this big extravaganza where they have a special Martin Luther King Memorial game in Memphis. And they honor three black athletes. And they're going to honor Elgin Baylor, Jim Brown, the football player from the 60s, and one other. I'm trying to figure out who that other one is. But anyway, I guarantee you it ain't Larry Bird.
Yeah, somebody particularly accomplished. Taylor wasn't the best player. But anyway, the point remains. Well, I got one for you here, Keith. And we got to get to this. You know, we're talking about, you know, the nation really deserves everything it gets, from Obama to the King holiday, because we've fallen asleep at the wheel. We've become dumbed down, bred in circus and the like. I was shocked, though. You know, those man on the street interviews that Howard Stern does, where he asks all these people in Harlem, you know, very basic second grade civics and government questions, and they don't know anything. They don't know Obama's running mate. They don't know his position. Well, that's not an anomaly. But it doesn't end there. I just found out this week, Keith, that a study has shown that, we put this up on the blog, one-fifth of all Americans can't locate the United States on a world map. One-fifth of all Americans. I'm going to repeat that for emphasis. One-fifth, 20% of all Americans can't locate the United States on a world map. And Miss South Carolina, Miss Team South Carolina, thank God she's beautiful. Because when you hear this clip, you'll understand why I say that. She gets flustered when asked why that is, why one-fifth of the country can't locate itself on the map. And let's listen to her answer.
This is the round of competition that ultimately determines their fate, the make-it-or-break-it moment. The ladies will have to demonstrate their ability to answer a thought-provoking final question. Sound simple? Easier said than done, especially when the whole country is watching. Here's how it works. Our panel of judges have prepared their own questions. So now, we will ask each finalist to pick the name of the judge, who will then ask a final question. Ladies, you'll have 30 seconds before you hear the sound of this bell. Good luck. We begin with South Carolina. Hello, South Carolina, please pick out the name of a judge. Thank you. Judge number 5, Amy Teagarden.
Okay. Recent polls have shown a fifth of Americans can't locate the U.S. on a world map. Why do you think this is?
I personally believe that U.S. Americans are unable to do so because some people out there in our nation don't have maps, and I believe that our education, like such as in South Africa and the Iraq, everywhere like such as, and I believe that they should, our education over here in the U.S. should help the U.S. Or should help South Africa and should help the Iraq and the Asian countries, so we will be able to build up our future for our children.
Thank you very much, South Carolina.
My gosh.
Like I said, thank God she's beautiful. What she said.
Well, she knew enough to know that she had to try to be. She knew enough to know that she had to try to be politically correct.
Well, let me say this, Keith. But you're exactly right, and that's why she stammered so much. I mean, an obvious answer popped into my head. If someone asked me on television why 20% of Americans can't locate the country on a map, I wouldn't know what the answer was. But you know, keep in mind, this was a teenage beauty queen. Being on TV isn't easy, you know, and I'm speaking from experience on that. It is intimidating, particularly if you're a young girl who hasn't been there before.
Well, I don't have any problem, James. I can answer that question.
Well, let me give you my answer, then you give me yours. And Sam Bushman, I was talking to him before the show, and he really nailed it. First of all, government schools, I mean, this is a product of the government school system. These are exactly the kind of people the government schools have been engineered to turn out, just idiots. And these people vote, and these people serve on juries. It's absolutely woeful, you know, broken families, you know, parents don't have an active role in their children's lives, kids are drugged up now, kids hyper, you drug them up with Ritalin, and it just goes on and on. So between the government schools doing what they are designed to do, which make people this dumb, you know, lack of good parenting now, and drugs, and then some. Obviously, the IQ of the nation has dipped as we have become more reflective of the third world society. But all of that, I think, goes into it. But she certainly couldn't say that on, I don't know what she said, but she didn't say that. And that would have been a great answer. Imagine if she did say that, the blowback that would have happened.
Well, Sam, are you there? You can chime in on this, too, if you like.
I don't know if he's...
Okay, well, let me say what it is.
Yeah, go ahead, Keith.
Okay, here's what I would say. The woeful consequences of liberalism and all of its baleful manifestations. Fathers taken out of the family, the racial integration of our public school system and private school system. Now that's what's being proposed under these so-called voucher systems. And the general dumbing down of America, the sexual revolution, the drug culture, the destruction of the family. All of these things have played a part, and I'm not sure that it was an accident or a coincidence. I'm not sure that it wasn't intended. But we certainly are not the self-sufficient people of last... And, you know, look, there's nothing that you can point to that is, you know, emblematic of what America is today than that.
We got a break. I hear the music. So stay tuned, everybody. We're going to be back.
Protecting your liberties. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
Are you worried about America? Do you fear the power of the Obama brigades to take away your rights? The Obama presidency is the most radical left-wing administration in American history. Our constitutional liberties are in danger. What can you do? Join the Council of Conservative Citizens. For over 20 years, the CFCC has fought for the rights and ideals of the European American majority. The CFCC has won legal and political battles to protect your heritage and your liberties. The CFCC advocates strong state governments over the power of Washington, D.C. to rule your life. The CFCC believes in an American first foreign and domestic policy which opposes globalism and one world government. The CFCC advocates racial integrity as God's natural order. Visit our website today at www.cfcc.org and join fellow European Americans in the fight for our people.
Each week, the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program, hits the airwaves to bring you the other side of the news and to report on events which are vital to your welfare but are hushed up or distorted by the mainstream media. However, to continue doing this, we need your support. Go online at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a safe and secure donation. If you prefer not to make an online donation, you can send us a check or money order to the address on the website. No matter which way you choose, the Political Cesspool needs your support. Go online to www.thepoliticalcesspool.org and make a donation today.
Yeah. We've been working hard, babe, to
get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. We gotta get out of this
place. All right, everybody. Welcome back. James Edwards, Keith Alexander. He's up there in the studio. I'm down here on the road attending a reception. Some supporters, and I'll be leaving you tonight at the top of the second hour, but you're going to be in more than capable hands with Keith Alexander and Sam Bushman. And then in the third hour, of course, we're going to be going to one of the most popular interviews of all time, revisiting a chat that Bill Rowland and I had with Nick Griffin, elected member of the European Parliament, an interview that dates back to August of 2009. That's going to be in the third hour. You don't want to miss that. If you did hear it three and a half years ago, you'll want to hear it again. If you've never heard it, you don't know what you're missing, and you can rectify the situation tonight. Well, Keith, we celebrate our heroes on this show. Contemporary heroes, I think, would certainly include men like Walt Disney. We talk about the geniuses of Western civilization, and you have to count him among them. You're talking about the man's creativity, his ingenuity, his... what he did in entertainment. I mean, he really certainly revolutionized children's entertainment, but really entertainment altogether, the theme parks, Epcot. I mean, who could have come up with such a perfect theme park as Epcot, except for Walt Disney? And, of course, politically speaking, and we've talked about this before on the show, it's long been rumored that Walt Disney held some pretty traditional and healthy, normal, paleo-conservative political viewpoints. And along those lines, we've linked to a 60th anniversary review of Dumbo that was interesting. But needless to say, as we all know, those who share Disney's sentiments are no longer leading his company. In fact, they've pretty much been weeded out of entertainment altogether. But a new play has come out, and it was written and composed by a Jewish fellow named Philip Glass. And basically, the assertion is that everything, and this is supposed to be a matter of fact, it isn't a fictitious rendering of the life and times of Disney, it's supposed to be autobiographical. And Glass says, basically, everything you've ever heard or known about Disney is a sham. The real Disney was not a legendary innovator. He was a racist, an anti-Semite, and a fraud who did not even work on the drawings that made him famous. In other words, he was just a figurehead, and it doesn't really say who did all the work or thing. And, of course, I don't buy into any of this at all. Was he a racist? Was he an anti-Semite? What does that mean in this day and age? I mean, we know what that means. If you have normal, sensible thinking, you're those things. But the allegation that he was a fraud and didn't come up with the drawings of Mickey Mouse and all of the other famous characters, really ridiculous. But it just goes to show, you know, people like Glass, who aren't fit to carry Disney's shoes, are hell-bent in their attempts to discredit our heroes, both those from antiquity, Keith, and the more contemporary heroes. Your take on this story, and it's up on the cesspool site tonight.
Well, there's obviously a new sheriff in town at Disney Studios today, and it's not somebody like Walt Disney. You know, it's typical Jewish criticism of anyone who is vaguely conservative. And, of course, Walt Disney was more than vaguely conservative. I really wonder if Mr. Glass would criticize Louis B. Mayer or Sam Goldwyn or Carl Laemmle of Universal Studios or... any of these many Jewish studio heads, really that date since the 1920s, for the fact that they didn't come up with, you know, let's say Andy Panda or Elmer Fudd or Bugs Bunny or things like this that ran on their under their studios. And of course, they would be lionized as being great studio heads. Walt Disney was a great studio head, but he was also something that all of these other studio heads definitely were not, and that is an extremely wholesome influence on American popular culture. Walt Disney's Disney Studios stood out like a beacon above the muck that Jewish-run Hollywood had become by the 1940s. In fact, Walt Disney learned the hard way about Jewish power and influence as he turned back entreaties to buy his studio by the Jewish hierarchy of Hollywood in the day, and as a result, they tried to sink him by organizing his cartoonists into a union and having them strike. Disney was basically down to his last card in the early 40s when he produced Dumbo. If Dumbo had been a flop, Disney Studios would have failed, would have gone into bankruptcy, would have been a memory, a brief glimmer of hope. But instead, he succeeded with Dumbo. Then he did Bambi. Then he did all of these other great shows. I think really the best era of Disney was the 40s and through the mid-50s, particularly the late 40s through the mid-50s, 45 to 55. Any movie that you see by Disney during that time is a masterpiece, just about. There's one called Melody Time that I'm not that fond of, but everything else, Treasure Island, Bambi, Song of the South, So Dear to My Heart, Peter Pan, all of these things were absolutely, you know, top drawer entertainment by anybody's standards. And they were, that there was no hidden agenda in them as there were in the Hollywood movies of this time, back when you had people like Dorie Sherry and Sam Goldwyn running these things. Of course, Carl Laemmle and Universal came up with all the horror movies. And I was watching a horror movie done by Laemmle's Universal Studios the other night called The Black Cat. It had homosexuality, it had Satan worship, it had things like this. And this was back in the 30s. They were basically, you know, trying to insinuate that type of evil into the public entertainment that early. And it's incredible to me, you know, the odds that Walt Disney was facing, one, to present wholesome movies. This is why you had things like in Memphis, Judge Binford's Better Movies panel that had to review everything that came out of Hollywood. You had to review everything coming out of Hollywood back then, and just like it's needed now, because there is so much filth coming out of that pipeline. And Walt Disney was the shining white knight, the guy that was working against all that and providing wholesome entertainment. In fact, I have three boys. They're all adults now. They were all raised on old Disney movies from the mid-40s to the mid-50s, primarily, some in the 30s and whatnot, and it's the best entertainment you can get. If you don't have an old VHS player, I suggest you get one. You can disable the cable and instead hook up that VHS and run old Disney movies, and you can be assured your children are going to get wholesome entertainment that will help them develop into good citizens.
Snow White, Pinocchio, all movies with very healthy themes. They teach you a morally sound lesson. You know, and Disney was like that in his life behind the scenes as well, Keith. You know, he came from very rural Red State America. A small town in Missouri was where he was born.
Marceline, Missouri. He was sent to live with his grandparents, and he had such an idyllic life there that is what sparked him and animated him to produce the type of stories and movies that he did. He is a vision back to the old America, the America of our ancestors. He shows the type of nation we were bequeathed by our ancestors. Keep your ancestors in mind. Keep people like Walt Disney in mind. That will give you hope to carry on against the forces of darkness and liberalism, which is, you know, we say on this show all the time that liberalism is the modern face of evil, and that's not hyperbole. We mean it. And compare a Disney movie with a Quentin Tarantino movie or a Michael Eisner era of Disney movie, and you'll see why Walt Disney wanted to keep Jews off his lot at Disney Studios.
And Keith, you know, you were talking about his love and affection for small-town America. When you go into his crowning achievement, the Magic Kingdom in Orlando, the first thing you see is Main Street, USA. That's the first themed area of the park, and that's, of course, the tip of the hat to his hometown in Missouri. And these morals that he had certainly were in effect in his life behind the scenes. A little bit of Disney trivia. After the movie studio became so successful, he built Disneyland in California, but he was landlocked and wanted to build another theme park resort area where he had the room to grow and cultivate any vision he could come up with. And, of course, that ended up being the Orlando area, and the rest is history. You know, it's the most visited vacation spot in the world. Cinderella's Castle is the most photographed building in the world. And, you know, this is this man's legacy. But what people don't know is that Walt Disney World, that complex that's in Orlando was originally going to be built in St. Louis, Missouri. And Disney was about to sign the papers to begin developing there, but he pulled up stakes and moved to Florida because he was getting a hard time from the Bush family, the beer baron. They were mocking him for saying that he didn't want to sell alcoholic beverages in his theme parks. They said, you know, you're never going to be successful if you don't sell beer in your parks. And, well, he showed them. They picked up stakes, moved to Orlando, and the rest is history.
Well, you know, his worst nightmare came to fruition, though, when Jews like Michael Eisner took over his beloved company and sullied its name.
It's a whole different ballgame now, as are the movies that Disney produces. So that's a whole other story. We'll be back right after this.
Okay.
As the United States boldly stepped forward in the glorious light provided by its new Constitution in 1787, the nations of the earth were in awe of the newfound strength and hope of this free land. Today, the nation stands at a crossroads, a divergence from the original intent put forth in the United States Constitution has brought grave threats to our beloved nation. A miracle is needed if the United States is to survive. That miracle is again the pure application of the United States Constitution. I'm Scott Bradley. In my To Preserve the Nation book and lecture series, I bring forth truths that will help raise up a new generation of statesmen like those noble Americans who founded this land. Vigorous application of these principles will invigorate and restore the nation, and we may become again the freest, most prosperous, most respected, and happiest nation on earth. Visit topreservethenation.com to begin that restoration.
Hello, everyone. James Edwards here. Are you sick and tired of liberals and race hustlers and the media calling you a racist just because you oppose Obama's policies? Well, my friend, those days are over. After you read Racism Schmacism, you'll never again fear being called the R word. I invite you to discover why every conservative in America needs a copy of my explosive new book. Racism Schmacism has received much critical acclaim and will equip you with the key to unlock their socio-political nuclear bomb once and for all. Order your copy today by visiting the official website of the Political Cesspool radio program, thepoliticalcesspool.org. Proceeds of each sale go to help keeping our award-winning show on the air, and they make great gifts for your conservative friend or family member. Buy Racism Schmacism today at www.thepoliticalcesspool.org.
If you're at all like me, you have a tough time remembering appointments and events. But ladies and gentlemen, I have the answer. It's a premier service on the internet called Memo to Me. It's free. You ought to try it. Now I never miss the honey-do items from my wife or the important business meetings. They have strict privacy protection. That means they will release your email address to no one ever. You will not get spam because of Memo to Me. Unmatched dependability. Ladies and gentlemen, these folks have been around since 1998, and they are absolutely up online all the time to send you your reminders and appointments. They have rock-solid reliability. They have 5 redundant internet connections, diesel-powered generators backing up the system. I'm telling you, Memo to Me is the premier reminder service on the internet. It's free. You ought to give it a try. And, oh, by the way, if you're not available at your computer to get your email reminders, they can even send a reminder to your cell phone or pager. I use MemoToMe.com daily and highly recommend it to you. MemoToMe.com. Memo to Me.
Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the final segment, at least for my part of the broadcast this evening. James Edwards calling in from the road. Don't forget, Keith Alexander and Sam Bushman will be taking over. Keith from our studio in Memphis and Sam from the network headquarters in Utah. Man, we are putting this thing together from all over the place tonight. Central Mississippi, Memphis, Utah. And then, to round everything out, the replay of our interview with Nick Griffin during the third and final hour. Folks, you got to stay tuned for that. That is certainly a treat that is coming your way before we run out of time this evening. A story we've been tracking for the last several weeks on the show, the numerous petitions coming out of the various states from citizens who wish to secede. And as you will recall, if any of those petitions, and several of them did, surpassed the $25,000 signature threshold, the White House was obliged to offer an answer. They had to address it publicly. Well, the White House has gotten back to those who signed the petitions, and the answer is no. They said no. The White House has responded to the hundreds of thousands of Americans who signed digital petitions asking permissions for the states to peacefully secede from the Union, so the story reads. The answer is no. As much as we value a healthy debate, writes John Carson, director of the White House's Office for Public Engagement, in the official response, we don't let that debate tear us apart. Listen to what he says, folks, because it's so laughable. I'm going to get to that, and then we're going to let Keith tell you what he thinks. According to the guidelines of the We the People website, when a petition reaches 25,000 signatures, the White House has pledged to put the petition on a queue for response. Louisiana's petition quickly reached that threshold and was followed by similar petitions from all 50 states, as I mentioned, several of which also topped 25,000 mark. Listen to what the White House said, though. Our founding fathers, I mean, you know, let me just stop right there. When it comes to people who respect and uphold the vision of the founding fathers, the first people that come to mind, to my mind, are the folks of the Obama administration, right? I mean, they shouldn't even be allowed to say the words founding fathers. Their contempt and hatred for everything they stood for is so apparent on a daily basis. But when it comes to answering a petition for secession, they say, you know, this is what the founding fathers would have wanted. Here's what they said. Our founding fathers established the Constitution in order to form a more perfect union through the hard and frustrating but necessary work of self-government. They enshrined in that document the right to change our national government through the power of the ballot, a right that generations of Americans have fought to secure for all. But they did not provide the right to walk away from it. In other words, the White House is saying that the founding fathers did not allow an out for the states. You can't come and go from the Union as you please. Well, that just goes to show how far removed and ignorant of the Constitution that the Obama administration and Obama himself is. Virginia and Texas, for instance, had it written in stone that they would be allowed to secede if they so chose, but, well, how about this? How about the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights? Here's what it says. I guess they didn't read this part of it. Governments are instituted in the parking lot. Declaration of Independence, Bill of Rights. Governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. That whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or abolish it and institute new government. So, Keith, my interpretation of that is, well, that exactly certainly backs up what the Confederate States of America did in 1861 through 1865. But anyway, your thought, Keith, on the official response from the White House to these secession petitions and their invoking of the Constitution and the Founding Fathers as if they care. I mean, look what Obama's done to the Second Amendment just this week. Yeah, they're real defenders of the Constitution.
Right.
Keith, take it away.
About destructive of those ends, they are basically just ignoring the fact that the Bill of Rights expressly prohibits the government, the federal government at the very least, from taking any type of action that would infringe upon the right to keep and bear arms, but that's precisely what they're doing. That's what the Obama administration is into up to its neck now. And they pretend to be the protectors of the Constitution. You know, I was reading on Occidental Observer, which we link to at our website, an article by a gentleman named Griffin about an article written and in the New York Times by a author named Seidman, named that ethnicity, by the way. And he basically says, isn't it time that we drop the pretense and just abolished the U.S. Constitution? After all, it was written by a bunch of old, now dead white guys that owned slaves, and none of them could have been very smart because none of them were Jewish. See, this is the way that the left looks at the founding of this nation. They see it as essentially flawed.
That gentleman, if I may use the word gentleman very loosely, he will not suffer accusations of racism or bigotry or hatred toward the founding stock, which he certainly has utter contempt and disdain for. He gets a free pass to criticize, deride, and spew that venom in our direction.
But on the other hand, if you point out that he's Jewish and that this type of criticism tends to come predominantly from the Jewish left community, then you're an anti-Semite. Now,
amen.
See, this is the utter and complete hypocrisy of the left in full display. If you will remember, back when the left felt itself weak, as in 1954 when the Brown decision came rolling out of the Supreme Court, they used the U.S. Constitution as a bludgeon to beat down conservatives and say that the Constitution requires that you have racially integrated schools. Of course, the Constitution requires nothing of the sort. They forgot to tell you that the 14th Amendment, which supposedly was the source of this grand egalitarian scheme that we had to racially integrate the schools, was drafted by the very same Congress, during the same term, that Congress created a racially segregated school system for the District of Columbia, Washington, D.C. Back in the old days, they didn't have an elected city government for the District of Columbia, which we call Washington, D.C. today. Instead, Congress was its government, and they governed it, and they created a racially segregated school system during the same Congress, the same two-year period in which the 14th Amendment was created. So therefore, it's quite obvious that the authors of the 14th Amendment didn't think there was any inconsistency between the doctrine of separate but equal on one hand and the equal protection clause of the 14th Amendment. But, you know, it was so obvious that was just opportunism on the part of the left. Now that the left thinks they have control of the population, that they have pumped enough non-whites into America that they can win elections without appealing to whites, now, the Constitution can't require the majority to do anything. If a majority of Americans, in their facile thinking, think that we should have gun control, then disregard the fact that the Founding Fathers thought that the right to keep and bear arms was so important that we had to have a provision in the Bill of Rights to protect that right, because they didn't want it subject to the vagaries of popular opinion. It had to be something that the government just could not do under any circumstances. Well, they're just opportunists. They remind me completely of a comment that is attributed to an Italian socialist named Vilfredo Pareto in the mid-19th century, who said, "When I am weak, I ask you for justice and equality, because those are your principles. But when I am strong, I deny justice and equality to you, because those are my principles." That's, in a nutshell, the approach of liberals to red state America and America's founding stock.
Keith, outstanding. I really appreciate what you just said. Great commentary, as it always is. You know, I was listening to an archive of the show earlier this week, a couple of them actually, when I was selecting what interview I wanted to play during the third and final hour tonight for the rebroadcast retreat here with me being out of town. And, you know, we really... And to say it sounding braggadocious, which I'm certainly not. I'm humble and modest to a great extent, but probably too modest when you take into consideration that which the show has accomplished. Of course, all of that credit is certainly due to the audience. But what I was about to say was I was listening to some of the show, some of our archive earlier in the week, and we really do have a great show. This is an incredibly important radio program, and I recognize that as a host, and I think our audience does as well. But the commentary you just received from Keith is really what sets apart this program and certainly this network, Liberty News Radio, this network itself. Certainly more than deserves to share in any good that we're able to do. But getting back to the topic at hand, you know, we knew that the Obama administration was going to say no.
1 hour down.
I was waiting for the answer, you know, with a little bit of curiosity as to exactly how they phrased it, would phrase it. But never did I imagine that an administration that hates the Founding Fathers and hates the Constitution so much would use both the Founding Fathers and the Constitution as a reason for their refusal to allow the states to secede. Folks, so that's the end of the first hour. Keith Alexander will be back with you in the studio for the second. And Sam Bushman will be joining him. You're not going to want to miss their conversation. And then, of course, that great replay of Dick Griffin in the third hour. That's it for me tonight, though. I will be back in the studio next week, and we're going to have another big show. So I'll see you then. But stay tuned for Keith and Sam coming up right after.
And the squirrel ran out of his britches leg unobserved to the other side of the room. All the way down to the Amen.